welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, waging the Truth Jihad, going boldly where few radio shows, if any, have gone before, bringing on four or five great guests every week, telling it like it is, way outside of the mainstream box. And we're getting so far out of the mainstream box today, we're actually going to have to navigate by way of not GPS, not old-fashioned maps, but ley lines. What are ley lines? Sounds like something you might use to catch fish or, I don't know, but no, ley lines, as some folks know, are these occult geomancy things. Anyway, we'll let the guest explain, and that would be Art Olivier. Art Olivier is not some street corner conspiracy bum, you know, ranting wildly and crazily in incoherent ways. Art is a very sharp guy. He was mayor of Bellflower, California for quite some time, ran up against the local mafia there. He ran as the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party in 2000 and lost out to some guy named Cheney. And, of course, the rest is history. Art has been interested in Freemasons recently. Not just the ordinary Shriners putting on the funny hats who march in the parades, but the people up there at the 33rd degree or higher who actually know what's really going on. And it looks like they're Satanists, and they're interested in all kinds of weird, sick stuff, human sacrifice-related things. And we all know that 9/11 did have that occult Freemasonic human sacrifice dimension that we've talked about on this show with folks like Tom Breidenbach. So anyway, Art has been putting out these amazing videos, finding these incredible coincidences that you'd have to be a coincidence theorist to believe regarding the sites of these, what do you call them, Freemasonic human sacrifices. And he's found more fascinating material relating to, guess what, the recent San Bernardino and Paris terror attacks that I addressed in my collection of essays. It's called Another French False Flag, Bloody Tracks from Paris to San Bernardino. And frankly, maybe I should have invited Art to contribute something, because he's found some very strange and amazing material that would fit right in with a couple of the pieces that we have, the more out there pieces by people like Henry McCoe, Ole Domegaard, and others who've noticed this Freemasonic occult dimension to these things. So let's let Art explain. Welcome, Art Olivier. How you doing?
Hey, Kevin. I'm not doing too bad.
Good. Yeah, good to have you back. Oh, and we got to mention, of course, we got to plug your film Operation Terror, the Hollywood-style thriller about what really happened on 9/11. But, you know, since you've gotten into this stuff, you know, I think you're a little bit outside of that even Libertarian Party mainstream. But yeah, this is fascinating stuff. Where do we begin with this?
Well, you know, this ritual, the San Bernardino Paris ritual, I had a friend, Fernando from Swiss 9/11 Truth, and he goes and he finds certain ley lines. He was thinking he was onto something, and so I was watching his ley line, and I could tell that it was off a little bit. And this line that we did find, we went from the San Bernardino shooting site to Stonehenge, to the very center of Stonehenge, and then we went to Fort du Mont Valerien, which is in Paris. Now, this is a five-sided star fort. It has what they call ravelins on each one of the five points. And there are several of these style of forts around the world. The one that I discovered earlier was Fort Independence in Boston, which happens to be a very important point as far as the 9/11 ley line, and then also what I call the Doomsday ley line, which goes to Brookhaven, the collider that's on Long Island in New York. Anyway. You'll find these lines, these forts, creating these lines all over the world. So that seemed to be that those three points lining up perfectly was onto something. And then those lines took me to Le Parc des Hautes Belvedere, which is a park that was built in Paris about the same time that the building that was built in San Bernardino was built in around 2006-2008 period. Now both sites on both ends of this ley line were built, the architects are Freemasons.
And that shouldn't surprise us, because, I mean, what are Freemasons but the free builder, free and accepted builders who have all the occult secrets of building, well, it used to be medieval cathedrals, and now it's God knows what.
Right, right. And so I didn't put it together, all the symbolism that was over there at Le Parc de Haute-Boulier. There was these angles and different shapes, and I just didn't understand what it was until I read an article written by a French researcher, and he started talking about the pianos, how the pianos had fit into this occult ritual.
And by pianos, you mean piano shapes in these designs.
Right, grand pianos. The parking lot that surrounds the building in San Bernardino, where they did the ritual here, is shaped as a grand piano. The designer of the architect in Paris for that park, his name is Renzo Piano.
You can't make this stuff up.
No. And he has the exact point at the park is at the vertex of this angle. For the ley line goes to exact point. These lines aren't approximate. They're not like 50 feet off or anything like this. These lines are perfect.
And see, that's such an important point, Art, because if we do ley lines where we have a lot of slop involved, because the crucial thing here, people, is when you get 3 points, obviously a line is the shortest distance between 2 points by definition. But if there's a third point on that line, the question then becomes, well, what are the probabilities that this could be just by chance? Because we could just draw lines all over the planet, and we'd find a few random interesting coincidences by sheer hazard, where you'd find three interesting things lining up if there's enough slop in the system. But if you're doing it with extreme precision, then, and you're really being careful about what kinds of events or places you're connecting, then you can start to get to these things that you can't really explain by chance.
Right. And then of course, this is 4 points. And it goes...
Right. So what are the odds of that?
Yeah. And then, of course, these are 4 very important points to Freemasons, obviously. Obviously, the two at the end were built, designed by Freemasons. And then, of course, you have Stonehenge and Fort Dumont de Bellerin. So anyway, it goes right to the vertex of this angle, and the angle is 37.5 degrees. Well, what the heck is 37.5 degrees? What does that have to do with anything? Well, that just so happens that when you open a grand piano up until all the way when it's open, it comes out to 37.5 degrees. And then there is a shape that, it was a really weird shape, and I had no idea what this shape was, until I matched up the foot pedal of a grand piano. It's perfectly shaped as just the same as the foot pedal of the grand piano. So after the massacres in Paris, there was this German guy, David Martillo, I think his name is. Anyway, they shut down the roads in Paris, so this guy could haul a grand piano behind his bicycle, take it to the massacre site, and play Imagine at the massacre site on his grand piano.
Now, which massacre site was this? Because there were 3, right?
Well, yeah, this was one of the latest ones of the Friday the 13th massacre.
Right, right. But there were on Friday the 13th, there was the Bataclan Theater, was the Café, and then there was the Stade de France.
Yeah, I'm not even sure which one it was. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of different sites that was related to the Friday the 13th massacre. Mm-hmm. And that's another little interesting side bit, is that if you lay out the massacre sites, almost all of the massacre sites on Friday the 13th are in a line that goes approximately north-south. This is not a perfect ley line by any means, because these were existing sites, but anyway, if you look at them, they go north-south and makes a line, except for there's 2 of them that come off at a 45, and that makes another line. And if you cross those 2 lines where all of these attacks occurred on Friday the 13th, then that cross is the Charlie Hebdo site.
Wow. Interesting. Well, now, I don't think that's in the recent YouTube you made, is it?
No, it was just getting too far off the subject. I didn't put it in there.
Maybe you'll have to do a sequel. Just like their sequel to Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah, they did a sequel, right? Yeah, but you can plot it out, you know, just kind of look at it. And it's not perfect. It's not a perfect ley line, so I didn't really include it. But it's interesting, nonetheless, that, that you know, these things are seemingly related.
So they had this guy hauling a grand piano with his bicycle. I mean, this is a kind of a cinematographic touch that it almost screams out premeditation. I mean, a huge massacre occurs. Who is going to just suddenly, oh, well, hey, let's call up this pianist and have him haul his grand piano with his bicycle to the massacre site to play Imagine?
Right. The way he tells the story is, well, I just saw it on TV and I just knew I had to come, and I drove all night long to get there, and somehow the police were all ready for him and they blocked off the streets and
anybody with a piano could just do that. You call up the president of France and say, hey, you guys just had a massacre. Do you mind if I just like bicycle my grand piano through town and go, you know, have the police block off all the traffic? It's so ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, because the grand piano was a very important part of this ritual. And back in San Bernardino, they also had a concert for the victims of that massacre. And, of course, they had a grand piano.
Really? At the site?
No. It was at a concert hall in San Bernardino.
Interesting.
And part of the story is that this Iranian woman who was a Christian that fled Iran because of Christian persecution, which we've been there and we know that's not true. But anyway,
no, people flee Iran so they can live the high life in Southern California in the Gusano exile community.
So anyway, she's what we call a vixim, a simulated victim, and all three of her children, part of the story, they all took lessons to play the piano. And the person that they took lessons from was part of this concert. I think her name is Peterson, Lindsay Peterson. Anyway, she is a opera singer, and she was playing the Let the Light of the Seraphim at this ritual, the concert. And, that's an angel, the seraphim. Some people in the occult believe that Lucifer was the leader of the seraphim.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. There's a whole angelology in Christianity and Islam that lines up with other traditions as well. But, yeah, the occult people apparently have an unusual view of that.
Right. So the... So these are all interesting, very interesting coincidences, if you will, all about the pianos at both ends of the spectrum.
Well, and also the music. You mentioned in your video that the Eagles of Death Metal were playing this anthem to Satan when the massacre happened, underlining the fact that this is a satanic human sacrifice. And a lot of folks noticed that one of their most popular songs has this refrain of, "Next stop, San Bernardino."
Yeah, they were playing Kiss the Devil. Who will kiss the devil? I will kiss the devil. I will kiss him on his lips. And this is what they were singing when the attacks occurred. And then, of course, they're from here, from Southern California, not too far from San Bernardino. And they do have a song called San Bernardino. So they have actually gone back now. They went back there, I think it was just last week, to play another concert in Paris.
Right. Another sequel.
Right, exactly. You have a lot of ties between San Bernardino and Paris, you know, because it is on the exact same ley line, and it's all part of the same ritual. And I think one of the things that people that haven't looked into this at all need to know is that all of the witnesses to the San Bernardino shooting said it was three tall white men with athletic builds, wearing black military fatigues.
Well, they just got a couple of little details wrong. You know, they actually were, of course, seeing this Muslim couple with this tiny, dark-skinned guy and petite little tiny woman. And they just mistook that for three very large, well-muscled white men.
Yeah, I don't even think they got any witnesses at all, that even any simulated witnesses to say that it was a dark-skinned man and a petite woman that was inside of the San Bernardino.
They're getting really lazy, aren't they? They're not even bothering to bring in a crisis actor or two.
No. You know, and that's another interesting thing is the way that the buildings, if you zoom in on the site, you know, that has the grand piano as a parking lot in San Bernardino, what you'll notice is that the buildings are not parallel to the street. They're at an angle. And so that typically means something, that when they put the buildings at an angle, and...
That's right. Well, you know, I actually did that, Art. Here on this rural property where I live in Wisconsin, we have a driveway, you know, coming in through the woods. And when we built a little log cabin mosque along the driveway, naturally, when you build a mosque for a special purpose, you orient it towards Mecca. We call that the Qibla. You know, when people pray, they bow in the general direction of Mecca. So that mosque is aiming or pointing, you know, at an angle from the driveway. And like people would ask, well, why would that be? Why would they build it that way? Well, there's a reason. It's there's a spiritual purpose behind it. And apparently, you're saying that these demonic folks, the Freemasons, do the same kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I followed the line of the angle of the building, and the only thing I could find was the Gersten Center, which was at La Jolla Marymount University in Los Angeles. It's a Jesuit college, and it goes right to the center of this. It's a basketball court, is what it is, and at center court, Hank Gathers died. He was their star player, and it seemed to have been somewhat of a ritual back then.
Now wait a minute. I actually didn't quite understand this in the video either. This guy, he's a basketball player who died at midcourt during a basketball game. How long ago?
Oh, this was back in the 90s. He was the star player. I mean, he was the NCAA number one player for 2 years in a row. I mean, this guy was a superstar. Mm-hmm. And so he died center court. And what was interesting is without his star player, I mean, the team really was nothing. It wasn't a great team. But they went on, and they were allowed to be in the NCAA finals. They didn't seem qualified.
Wait. How can you be allowed to be in the NCAA finals? I mean, the way the NCAA tournament is set up is you lose and you're out. So there are series you have to keep winning.
Just to get in, you have to be one of the top 64 teams in the nation.
Well, that's right, yeah. So they were basically given a pass to be in the tournament even though they were no good.
Right.
I see.
And
then they couldn't get to the finals.
Well, but what's interesting, though, is that they were playing the Spartans from Michigan.
Michigan State.
And they were the reigning national champions. And during this game, the reigning national champions were not defending. They were not defending the three ball. They had this guy, Jeff Flyer, and they would just let him shoot all day long from the three-point line, which is pretty short in college basketball. And the Lions from La Jolla Marymount, they ended up getting 149 points in a college game.
149 points?
Yeah, because there was no defense in the game. It seemed to be a part of the ritual.
So somebody was throwing the game. So actually, this team won.
Yeah. The La Jolla Marymount won without Hank Gathers, who had just died two weeks previous.
So this was the national championship or the quarterfinals or which game was this?
No. This was the quarterfinals. They ended up losing the next game, but you know, just the fact that they beat the reigning national champions by getting 149 points in a college game—that's
completely insane.
Yeah. When I watched the video, and you just see the people from Michigan, you know, they'll run over there with the guy with the ball, but they'll keep their hands down. They would never put their hands up to defend the ball. So
wow, very strange.
That was interesting. But anyway, so on that exact same line, from the Gersten Center through the orientation of the building where the massacre took place. You go back another 2 miles to the east, and it takes you to the exact point where they killed that that couple, the alleged terrorist.
Huh.
So that, see, at that point, it's only 2 miles from the site, and you would think, oh, wait a minute, this is 4 hours after the massacre. You know, couldn't their car go more than a half a mile per hour?
Yeah, that's not a very good getaway car.
No. And it wasn't the same car as the ones that was used in the massacre. The one that massacre was a Yukon, and the one at the site where they killed that couple was an Excursion. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, they were doing active shooting drills. A lot of the witnesses they were saying that, oh yeah, we just thought it was part of these drills that they've been doing, and I'm sure this couple was part of this active shooting drill. So they were told to go to this exact spot, which is on the ley line, to get out of their car, that there would be cops there, you know, and they're all part of the drill, and you just go over there and point your guns toward them. And of course, you know, most of the cops didn't know this was a drill. Uh-huh. And, you know, they blew that poor couple away.
Interesting. Well, and of course, we know that this was probably the only facility for disabled people in the entire world that had an active shooter exercise going on every single month. So they obviously had focused all kinds of terror exercise activities on this facility, which would have given them the opportunity to plan out an exercise that went live like this.
Right, right. And part of the drill was that they had a prop police car parked there with all the other police cars. You know, you remember, you know, there's 100 police cars there. And but they had one prop car with a whole bunch of bullet holes in the windshield. And so that you would believe that that couple got out of the car and they started shooting live rounds at the police officers. And of course, they missed every single car except for that one prop car, which had about 20 holes in the windshield.
And that was supposedly the couple being shot at, or?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones that shot.
No, is that the car that the windows were rolled up, and yet we were told that the couple initiated the shooting from inside the car? Because that was one of the issues raised by their attorney.
Yeah, no, that was the Excursion, but the prop car was an actual police car with about 20 holes in the windshield.
I see. Okay, but, so they're blaming the couple for shooting out the windshield of the police car.
Right. Gotcha. But the police car was a long ways away from the from their Excursion, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a single round that hit any other car or person or anything else. It was just that one windshield that that was shot out. Kind of reminds me of the light pole going through the taxi in at the Pentagon from
the prop.
Yeah, prop. Yeah. Always have to have a prop.
Interesting. Wow. And people who are scratching their heads listening to this, you know, saying this doesn't really sound like a lot of the stuff we've seen regarding investigations of false flags. I should notice that there is this history of apparent Freemasonic ley line connection, other kinds of sort of mapping out these geometrical designs regarding places of human sacrifice.
Right, yeah, and you could just go to the biggest false flag of the 21st century, which is 9/11, and there's a very important ley line, which I discovered, and it goes from, you know, I told you, it starts at the two star forts, one at Fort Jay and one at Fort Independence. And anyway, the line goes from the Boston Logan Airport all the way to Obelisco Los Niños.
Obelisco de los Niños. Yeah, the murdered children.
Yeah, the Obelisco Los Niños.
Yeros. In Mexico.
And it is an obelisk that was built by a Freemason Diaz, who was the president of Mexico, built this obelisk there where they had killed, cut out the hearts of six Mexican children back in 1847. Anyway, so from that obelisk to the point in this exact point at Boston Logan Airport, if you follow that line, it goes right through the World Trade Center and through the center of the Pentagon, you know, in a perfect ley line.
Right. So, and you know, when you stop and ask yourself, okay, could a coincidence theorist explain this correctly or not? You've got the 4 points, and these points, three of them are key 9/11 points. Boston Logan Airport was where Muhammad Atta supposedly left his, well, actually, he supposedly got on the plane in Portland, Maine, for no good reason. To make a tight connection, a less than 1 hour connection at Boston Logan Airport. Not exactly what you would do if you were really going to fly a plane into the Trade Center, but anyway, according to the official story, that's what Atta did, and then he hijacked Flight 11 from Boston Logan Airport and flew it into the North Tower. That was the first attack on 9/11, and definitely the linchpin of the 9/11 episode. So here we have Logan Airport, where the 9/11 episode started. And where, you know, not only that, but that's where the suitcase was allegedly discovered, the magic suitcase of Muhammad Atta that included a ludicrously parodic bismillah in its supposed last will and testament of Muhammad Atta begins, in the name of God, myself, and my family. So somebody was having a dark joke there on all of us who would think that any Muslim would actually begin a document with that ludicrously blasphemous parody of the bismillah. So Boston Logan Airport is this key place. I mean, that's where that suitcase was discovered. That's how we identified the alleged 19 hijackers. That's where Atta did his first attack flight, supposedly, even though there's not a shred of evidence that he was even on the plane. And then you go through the Trade Center and the Pentagon, the two sites of the attacks of 9/11. And let's not forget that they're both massively Freemasonic sites and symbols. The two greatest symbols in Freemasonry are the Twin Towers of Joachim and Boaz and the Pentagram. And so here we have the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. Obviously, a Freemasonic inside job coup d'etat. So you connect those three things on a line. You've already got three very, very significant 9/11 sites. And since 2 points connected make a straight line, you get a third site on that line that's already a heck of an interesting quote-unquote coincidence. But then you throw in this really bizarre Freemasonic human sacrifice site in Mexico, the Los Niños obelisk that you're talking about, Art. That's, you know, that does seem to be something that's really begging for us to interpret it as deliberate behavior, deliberate mapping out of human sacrifice sites. And we know the Freemasons are into this stuff. If you don't believe that the Freemasons love to draw lines and make geometrical designs with all of these occult meanings, you know, just read Dan Brown's novel, The Lost Symbol, which will take you on a Freemasonic tour of the layout and architecture of Washington, D.C. So this is plausible. People should not be dismissing Art as a lunatic, right, Art?
Oh, they can if they want. I don't mind. But the a couple more interesting things about the Obelisco a los Niños Héroes is that there's a fence around this giant obelisk, and at the gate is two pillars, and it's the pillars of Joaquin and Boaz. Twin Towers. Now this was done in eight. The attack was planned in a council of war. It was on September 11th, 1847. So that's, you know, kind of ties in with the September 11th thing again. And the boys had their hearts cut out, you know, and they created a story. It said that they all went in and they stabbed themselves in the chest, you know, and killed themselves. But you know, these six boys.
Yeah, good luck convincing six boys to all carve their own hearts out.
And the point of the obelisk is at the base of Chapultepec Hill. Now, this is the site in 1247 where the Aztecs committed their very first human sacrifice.
Hmm. Very, very odd. You know, doesn't this raise issues of whether there might be some, who knows what, some kind of intelligence, quote-unquote, out there, that's helping create or orchestrate these human sacrifices across cultures and across time?
Well, yeah, I mean, what I think it is, you know, back in the 14th century, you know, people were told the earth was flat and that you couldn't go past the pillars of Hercules and, you know, you'd be in peril. But I think the people that that ruled this world, they knew that the Americas existed, and I think they went back and forth. You know, you look at all of the Indian legends that there were these white gods that had come over there to Mexico and to Peru and
Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah, you know, and that they had ruled and they looked just like a king did from Europe. I mean, they had specters and they had crowns and all this stuff. And so I think the Europeans had gone back and forth to the Americas long before Christopher Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of evidence of that kind of cross-continental contact, including some examples of African and Muslim cross-continental contact. For instance, the Olmec heads in Mexico have African features, and there is a fair amount of evidence that Muslims from West Africa, Morocco, and so on had been to the Americas before Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now getting back to the piano. Now the pianos on both ends of this ley line, you know, like I said, they were built 2006-2008 range there, and so what else was related to a piano that came out about that time? Well, the New Horizons probe. Now, the New Horizons probe is a probe that is supposedly going to Pluto to take pictures of Pluto, because Pluto is such an important space object, right? Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. The New Horizons probe to Pluto is shaped like a piano.
Right. This is what Wikipedia says, that it is the same size and shape as a grand piano.
Well, why didn't they just send a grand piano?
They did. Send a grand piano, a flying grand piano that they sent. Supposedly, that's going to Pluto. Huh. Now, if you look at it's $700 million to send this probe out there.
Now, that's an expensive grand piano.
Yes,
it is. That's worse than the Stradivarius violin.
Yeah, $700 million. Now, if you look at the pictures of Pluto that they've done for this $700 million project, it looks exactly like these artist renderings of Pluto that were done back in the 70s. It's just the same. It's the same planet. But anyway, these are these great pictures that have been taken by the New Horizons probe. Mm-hmm. So my theory is that. That's not where the New Horizons probe is going.
Don't tell me. It's actually going to Alpha Centauri to play a piano concerto for the aliens.
No.
Good guess, but wrong.
That's a good theory. Now, the Caltech has recently come out with this information of a ninth planet, you know, because Pluto's not considered a planet any longer. It's just a space object.
It's been demoted.
Yes, it has, because there's a whole bunch of little Plutos flying around out there in the Kuiper Belt. But if you look at the way that all the asteroids come around the sun, they all come in this elliptical fashion, where all this space debris is going in one direction off of the sun in an elliptical fashion. Well, if there wasn't anything to counterbalance that, the whole solar system would be out of whack. The whole sun would be shaking around, and we would just be a disaster. It just wouldn't work. It's not possible. There has to be something to counterbalance these asteroids in an equal and opposite direction with the same kind of mass. And what Caltech says is this is the ninth planet.
And they just officially announced this after decades and decades of deriding everybody talking about the ninth planet Nibiru as a crazy conspiracy theorist. Just not so long ago, was it a month ago or something? They just admitted that the conspiracy theorists were right all along. There really is such a planet.
Yeah, they say that other solar systems have planets like this that have these planets that go in these wild elliptical fashions. And you know, the evidence shows that we have one here, and so my theory is that the New Horizons probe is actually going towards this ninth planet to take pictures, to track the progression of the planet, you know, the speed, get the size of this planet, you know, to get all this important information.
But wait a minute. How could that be? Because supposedly we don't even know where this ninth planet is.
Well, there may be. I mean, mathematically, you can get an idea of where the planet is just by tracking the asteroids. So you know that where it should be, and there are telescopes that could see it, and
such as the Lucifer telescope.
The Lucifer telescope. You know that you would think. Wait a minute, Lucifer telescope.
Who's going to name a telescope
would
after
their
devil?
Telescope, Lucifer telescope.
The Freemasons would.
Or the Vatican. Maybe. The Vatican owns the Lucifer Telescope, which is in Arizona. And the Pope, he was asked about the third secret of Fatima.
This is the secret that's so awful and so horrible that every time a pope opens up the envelope and, like, reads it when he becomes pope, he falls into a depression and cries and, you know. And there are all sorts of weird theories about what awful secret this could be. The Muslims are going to take over the world is one of the theories. But here's another one.
I think Pope John Paul II laid it out very clearly what that third secret is. He was asked about it, and he said, you know, if there is a secret that would end up killing, flooding the coastal cities and killing millions of people throughout the world, then that secret is desired to be revealed.
Well, that's a heck of a thing to say. That sounds like a non-denial denial.
Right. So I think he was pretty clear about that. And, you know, and then the fact that the Vatican owns the Lucifer telescope, which has the ability to see where Nibiru is located, you know, you kind of put all this stuff together, you know. And the people in the occult, some of them believe that Lucifer at one time resided on Nibiru. And so I think that's where the symbolism from all of these, you know, the San Bernardino and Paris rituals of a grand piano is tied into the flying grand piano, which is the New Horizons probe.
Wow. Now, this is a wild theory. The idea that Lucifer has some tie into Nibiru maybe that would also fit with the idea that Lucifer is supposedly the bright morning star. I mean, that's one of the old descriptions. And I suppose if Nibiru were a planet with this elliptical orbit with a lot of gravitational mass, which it would have to balance all of these asteroids, if it were to come close to the Earth, it would appear as a ever brighter star, and if it got close enough, it would rip the planet apart, cause gigantic tidal waves drowning the cities, like the Pope said. And interestingly, this kind of description sounds an awful lot like some of the descriptions of the end of the world from the Quran. You know, there's the famous surah of the mountains being destroyed like moths' wool. The mountains would be like moths' wings. The dust on the moths' wings would be what would happen to mountains. And similar, that's the Surah al-Zilzala, the earthquake surah, and a few others that seem to describe something like this. I know when I read the book by Anthony Burgess, who's the author of Clockwork Orange and a lot of other interesting books, it's called The End of the World News. And it's a parody of the way the BBC signs off with, and this is the end of the world news. Well, this is the end of the world news because it's Burgess's book about the way the world ends, and it ends when Nibiru or something like it comes crashing right into Earth's orbit, basically, you know, wiping out the planet and all the people thereon. So this all kind of fits together, doesn't it? It's also not a very pleasant thought if this were going to happen anytime soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, sure, it's possible that Nibiru could hit Earth, but I see that highly unlikely. You know, this, you know, space is pretty big. But,
so you don't believe the secret of Fatima?
No, I do. But I think that the secret is that it'll become close enough to Earth. You know, this is a planet 1,000 times more massive than the moon. And if this planet even came, you know, 500,000 miles away from Earth, it would have a huge gravitational force on Earth. And, of course, that would create huge tides. I mean, these tides could be thousands of feet tall.
And earthquakes, massive. And that is the scenario in Burgess's novel, End of the World News. It's not that it's going to hit the Earth. It just comes close enough to you know, create chaos.
Right. But, yeah, and I could see, some earthquakes, and definitely that would trigger a lot of the quakes. But I think that the biggest threat to humanity, of course, is these huge tides, because, a huge percentage of Earth's population is on coastal cities, and these would, of course, be wiped out if Nibiru got close enough to Earth.
So here we have another threat to people in coastal cities. It's not just global warming melting the ice caps that they should worry about.
I don't know. I've lived here in Southern California. I've gone to the same beach since I was a little boy. And you know what? There hasn't been any increase in sea level. It's the same.
Right. Well, in any case, though, if Nibiru's heading your way, you better, have your surfboard at the ready.
Right. Yeah, I have to have a nice surfboard. That would be really surfs up in California.
Right. Surfs up. Yeah. Play the Beach Boys. One of their duets with Charles Manson or something. Speaking of which, what does a piano have to do with any of this? I mean, I can see sort of these piano shapes. Okay, we orchestrated, musical metaphor, the shootings in Paris, during a death metal concert with an anthem to the devil, who's from a band whose one of our favorite songs is Next Stop San Bernardino. And then we orchestrated San Bernardino, and the parking lot there looks just like a grand piano. But now our grand piano suddenly flies off into outer space looking for Nibiru. I mean, how does the musical or piano element fit in here?
Well, Lucifer is the angel of music.
Wait a minute, really?
Yeah, before Lucifer was sent down from heaven, he was the angel of music. He played the music up in the heavens, and he's
wait, wait a minute. You mean those pictures of like an angel playing a harp in the sky, like the angel is supposed to have horns?
No, this is before he had horns.
I see.
But you'll see there are plenty of pictures of Lucifer playing a harp, because he's the angel. The angel of music.
Wow. So maybe, those conservative Muslims who tried to convince Cat Stevens that music was haram in Islam and succeeded in shutting down Cat Stevens' musical career for many years were right.
Well, he's definitely. And then the harp has, I believe, 60 chords. And that was the first piano had the same amount of chords as a harp. And, now it's got 88 keys, I believe, in a grand piano. But so that was the, a piano was created after a harp. And Lucifer is your most famous harp player in the world.
Wow. Now, I hope that doesn't ruin my enjoyment of piano music.
Yeah, I hope not.
I mean, what do we make of this, though? Because, I always thought that music was like other forms of expression, that it could be used for benevolent purposes or malevolent purposes. It induces changes in consciousness that can range from various kinds of emotions, including things like yearning and so on. Like Rumi, the great Sufi poet, and whose work is considered a commentary on the Quran, has used this metaphor of the reed being blown and bent over by the wind, and the hollow reed then makes this sound of plaintive longing, which is its song of wanting to be reunited. And ultimately that's that kind of musical, emotional, plaintive longing is about wanting to be reunited with God in the ultimate oneness from which we all came and to which we all return. And so that type of music or musical meaning would certainly seem to be perfectly orthodox, kosher, monotheistic, mystical, however you want to call it. It wouldn't seem to be anywhere near the same sort of thing as some band, you know, playing like, you know, Kiss the Devil and, you know, Human Sacrifice songs and all this, you know, Black Sabbath kind of dark, satanic, heavy metal type crap. I mean, it's all, seems to me that, that music shouldn't be lumped as like all the same thing, you know, all associated with Lucifer. That just doesn't seem intuitively correct to me.
No, and I don't think it is, but there are mathematical equations that go along with music that, you know, that get in tune with our own harmonics that are going through our minds, and I believe that a lot of people that you know, that actually control this world, they know these mathematical formulas, and they're able to create music that that is attractive to humans, and by doing this, you know, they are able to get people that have some musical talent to make them into superstars, and then this becomes our own popular popular music and culture.
Well, there are all sorts of rumors about the world of the music industry being, you know, infiltrated by the Illuminati. You know, we hear this over and over. Was it Michael Jackson's doctor, I think, said that they killed him because he was suddenly turning against the Illuminati, and all these kinds of stories. If you listen to hip-hop music, especially the sort of conspiracy-edged hip-hop music that I find interesting, there are all sorts of references like this to a supposedly demonic or satanic Freemasonic Illuminati group that supposedly has its tentacles wrapped all around the music industry. But once again, I don't see how that would implicate all of music as a kind of satanic power.
No, but the very popular stuff, I think, is that if you really want to be a superstar, I think you have to sell your soul.
Yeah, and there is that legend, that sort of Faustian legend gets all kind of reinforcement in all, a lot of things that, that are being said. And I don't know. It's interesting. Did you ever see that Brian De Palma film, The Phantom of the Paradise?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that's a classic cinema depiction of this kind of, you know, Faustian legend. It's, of course, a takeoff on Phantom of the Opera. In this case, it's about a musician being forced to sell his soul to become a star. It's fairly well done. If you appreciate the kind of sizzling, entertaining trash that often comes out of people like Brian De Palma, you might enjoy that movie.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of entertainers have talked about how they were possessed by the devil. I mean, if you look at Robin Williams, for example, he said that when he really gets into his best work, that he becomes possessed, that something takes over him. And it was interesting. One of my important ley lines that I discovered with the Satan Kiss ley line, you know, it went from the Kiss nightclub in Brazil, where they sacrificed a bunch of college students to Coquilco, which is a site in Mexico. It's a circular human sacrificial site, to the Church of Satan, and then you go on beyond the Church of Satan in San Francisco, a couple of miles, and it goes to Robin Williams' house where he lived, and the house is orientated with the line going straight out the front door, goes with this satanic ley line, and above the door is the two giant masks of comedy and tragedy, but these are different than your normal comedy and tragedy mask. These comedy and tragedy masks have giant satanic goat horns on top of them.
Now that's exactly the kind of thing that I would have included in my weird tour guide to San Francisco had I known about it. And I don't know if my listeners are familiar with that, but that was actually the first book I ever wrote. It's called Dr. Weird's Weird Tours, A Guide to Mysterious San Francisco. And I published that back in 1994 and ended up handing it over to Last Gasp Publishers, who didn't do a whole lot with it, but you can still find copies on the internet. At times, the price has gone up into the hundreds of dollars. And anyway, this book, The Weird Tour Guide to San Francisco, did cover this type of thing. But I missed the fact that Robin Williams had these comedy and tragedy masks with horns and on a ley line going through the Church of Satan. I did include a bunch of Anton LaVey gossip in that book. LaVey was the head of the Church of Satan for quite a while I lived in San Francisco, and he was kind of a local eccentric character. But apparently there's no end to these things. And the Freemasonic connection, the Freemasons deny that they're Satanists, but it sounds like from the kind of information you've uncovered, Art, that at the higher levels of Freemasonry, that's precisely what is revealed.
Well, Albert Pike doesn't deny it.
That's true.
Yeah, you read Morals and Dogma. I mean, that's, that's their Bible. And he doesn't deny that that Lucifer is the grand architect of the universe.
And that almost sounds like a kind of dualism, because the dualists are the people who say that there are these two utterly opposed powers in the universe. There's the good power, sort of this original God, but unfortunately we're stuck in the part of the universe that's been created by this bad God.
Right, and I think they believe that it's their mission to bring this evil upon Earth. It's to balance out the good with their evil.
Very, very, very odd. Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I find, like in so many areas, the Islamic view of these matters just fits better with common sense than most of the other ones. And the Islamic view is that the God is not some guy with a beard on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. It's not a Father, Son, Holy Ghost, nothing like that. God is this ineffable unity out of which all creation emerges. And the devil, or the Shaitan, Audhubillah, as we call him, was this angel who didn't want to bow down to humans and became the enemy of humans. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's pure metaphysical evil, as we often would see with the dualisms or even with Christianity. Rather, everything on earth ultimately has to serve God, even including Satan in some sense, even though his very rebellion against God is actually part of the whole plan. And I mean, that sort of makes sense theologically. It doesn't necessarily solve the problem of evil to everyone's satisfaction, though.
No. During the 9/11 attacks, I don't know if you recall, they were showing in the TV that the devil was in the smoke of one of the burning Twin Towers.
Right.
And it was simply a picture of Ahriman, the Zoroastrian devil, Persian
mm-hmm.
devil.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it myself. I just took that exact same picture and just overlaid it with the smoke of the Twin Towers, and the picture comes out exactly like which was printed in Associated Press. That's all they did, but they were showing that that it was that the putting out the symbolism there that it was the devil that was behind the 9/11 attacks.
Now, do you think that they photoshopped or retouched the photos to produce that?
I know they did. I know they did because I did the exact same thing. It wasn't just an accident that the smoke looked like this Ahriman devil, because I got the exact same picture that they used to Photoshop into the smoke of the Twin Towers.
Wow. So who first published that?
Associated Press.
AP. Okay. Well, we know that they're doing the work of the devil, along with the rest of the mainstream media. Speaking of which, how about this whole Trump thing? We only have a few minutes left. What's your take on Trump getting more and more upfront in his 9/11 questions, targeting Jeb Bush and knocking Jeb Bush out of the race by saying things like, when you elect me, I'll tell you who really knocked down the Twin Towers. That's a heck of a thing for a presidential candidate to say, especially one who's way, way ahead of his competition.
Well, I don't know, but my theory is that that it will be revealed that it was Israel that was behind the 9/11 attacks. I don't believe this, but...
Well, if anyone was going to do it, it would be Trump.
Right. And I think that's, when he was talking about the dancing Muslims that had were celebrating in New Jersey after the Twin Towers collapsed. We all know that.
He got the religion there mixed up.
Yeah, it was the dancing, I don't know about religion, but it was
the
dancing.
Whatever, the ethnicity, yeah.
Yeah, and And I see a lot of this. You know, the recent book that was almost like Operation Terror, which is written by this woman, Rebecca Roth. You know, we find out that Rebecca Roth is actually CIA.
Well, that's what Fetzer says.
Yeah. Well, you know, it really, she has, you know, gone back. She was allowed to promote her book on certain alternative media sites that I wasn't allowed to promote Operation Terror on.
Yeah, I'm a little suspicious of her, partly because the book, I mean, it's not very good from a literary point of view, to say the least, and yet it apparently sold a whole lot. So I don't know. That's a little concerning.
Yeah, you know, and she wears a wig and she has these glasses, and you know, and you know, before this, she was selling some snake oil on the internet.
Yeah, but of course, none of that is really damning evidence against her.
No, but what is damning is that she will not say what airline she worked for. She won't say where she was stationed out of. She, you know, because I have friends that are flight attendants, and they say, well, where is she from? Where's she, you know. Why would she not tell anybody? That doesn't make any sense, mm-hmm. You know, because they would be able to track her what these flight attendants are saying is no.
Yeah. And so that is a problem. We need to
was not and never has been a flight attendant.
Well, maybe not. But we do need to listen to people who are willing to be honest about who they are and where they came from,
exactly.
With more confidence than people who don't.
But anyway, one of the things that she promotes is that it was the Israelis. The Israelis did it.
Mm-hmm. I always thought that was one of the reasons to listen to her.
And she's come out with this evidence. You know, it was just amazing. The Israeli art students that were camped out inside of the Twin Towers.
I broke that story many years ago, actually.
I know, but she's really come out with, you know, these photographs of thousands of boxes that could have been used as triggers for the demolition of the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And
so give us the short version of what this all means, because we only have about 1 minute.
Oh, yeah. The short version is that I think Donald Trump, Rebecca Roth, a lot of the people are gearing us towards the fact that, you know, the 28 pages that the real people behind 9/11, I think, is what's going to come out in the mainstream eventually, was Israel. Because, you know, according to the Bible, all nations turn against Israel. And I think that the attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, all of this stuff, they're going to tie it into the Mossad to get all nations to turn against Israel.
Hmm. Well, they couldn't turn against a better country to turn against, in my humble opinion, but we'll see how that plays out. Anyway, it's an interesting theory, and we have talked a little bit about that before. Maybe I'll link those earlier shows, and we may be able to pick it up again in the future, but we're at the end of the hour today, so thank you so much, Art Olivier. I found your recent video very, very well made. I'll be posting a link to that at the Truth Jihad radio blog. That's truthjihad.com, and click on the radio link. And while you're at truthjihad.com, please do kick in a couple of bucks to keep these shows going. There's a donate button there, or you could even subscribe for only $3.95 a month and get all kinds of great radio as soon as it's put out there. Everybody else has to wait a couple of days. Well, thank you again, Art Olivier, director of Operation Terror, producer of Operation Terror. Keep up the great work.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Okay, bye-bye.